Hello, I'm Chris Gore. This is number 0388, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0388. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we have a return visit from Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch brothel in Nevada, and he's discussing Putin's claims that Russian hookers are better than American ones.
The Russian girls are in the sex trade out of desperation. 70% of the high school girls in Russia have had sex for money only because they're broke. They have no money. They have no other choice. Our girls are in the business because they want to be. They're sexual nurses, if you will. They love to please people, and they want to make a good living at the same time.
Ernie Smith is the founder of the website Tedium. The site's subtitle is The Dull Side of the Internet. But it really isn't dull at all.
I want to find the weirdest, strangest possible topics I can possibly find to write about. Like things that people would never think to write about because they seem boring. Like the history of the Klondike Bar. Or how the people who make Hot Pockets are really rich now and they give money to Jewish centers. And all sorts of weird, crazy, all over the place kind of stuff. And I think that it's dull when I find it. Hopefully when I'm done, after I'm done writing about it, I make it slightly more interesting than that.
Fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo talks about fantasy sports addiction.
It's a major problem, and it seems like it grows each and every year, and it consistently gets even bigger. I mean, we're talking about, we've mentioned this before, I mean, it's come to people losing homes and marriages being destroyed and actually being disowned by their own children, so to speak. So it's a really big problem, and it keeps growing every year.
And there's lots and lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0388 was Chris Gore, who is a dog groomer slash music producer in Coachella Valley in California. I'm assuming he doesn't do the two of them at the same time. You can check out his website at thedogmancometh.com. Chris, by the way, is somebody I also went to high school with way, way back in the day. Thank you very much, Chris, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? According to police in Michigan, a woman flew into a rage after her boyfriend told her that he was not ready to commit to a serious relationship with her. Roseville police arrested 29-year-old Bettina Christine Jackson after being accused of stabbing her 39-year-old boyfriend 9 times. According to the criminal complaint, Jackson recently met her boyfriend on the internet and they went out on 2 dates. After the second date, Jackson asked her boyfriend, who was not identified, whether he was ready to commit to a serious relationship. When he said it was too early to decide, Jackson pulled a knife and stabbed him in the back and neck 9 times. The man was rushed to hospital where he is expected to survive. Okay, perhaps I misspoke in telling this story because, unlike Batty Bettina, I don't know if 2 dates constitutes using the term boyfriend or girlfriend. In any case, I'm certain Bettina will be off the relationship market for quite some time, so for now, it's a moot point. Yeah. And moving on, if you didn't think there was a world record for smashing open coconuts on your head, then think again. 30-year-old Rashid Nasim of Karachi, Pakistan, just said it when he managed to crack open 43 fresh green coconuts with his head in just 60 seconds. The feat was recorded on video and was uploaded on Facebook, where it went viral. Representatives of the Guinness World Record were at the scene to officially record the world record. Nassim revealed that he trained for 6 months to be able to achieve the world record. When he began smashing coconuts with his head, he suffered splitting headaches, but they later went away as his body got used to the banging. Nassim holds the world record for smashing the highest number of drink cans. Last year, he smashed 210 walnuts on his head in 60 seconds, which is also a world record. You know, folks, it's always good to have goals in life, but I also sense that Rashid must have had a somewhat lonely childhood. Just guessing. Meanwhile, a Mexican man's member is so frighteningly monstrous that doctors have urged him to consider a penis reduction procedure in an effort to improve his life. But 54-year-old Roberto Esquivel Cabrera says he's happy with his manhood, craves recognition, and has dreams of becoming a porn star in the United States. To hell with sex, Cabrera reportedly told Barcroft TV. I am famous because I have the biggest penis in the world. Unofficially. Measuring 18.9 inches, the ungodly size of Cabrera's penis dwarfs the previous record holders. American Jonah Falcon previously claimed to have the largest known phallus, which reportedly measured 13.5 inches. Nonetheless, Cabrera says he's being shafted by the Guinness Book of Records people. The reference book doesn't recognize penis size, but that's the least of Cabrera's problems. Doctors have advised him to reshape his penis due to lingering health concerns. According to the UK's Mirror, Cabrera suffers from frequent urinary tract infections. He's forced to keep his gigantic penis wrapped to prevent chafing. He also fears being sacked by prospective employers because he can't fit into uniforms, kneel, or move quickly. The least of his worries, he says, is sleeping with women. While doctors have offered him a better sex life, Cabrera sees his elongated member as an asset. I would like to be a porn star, and I think I would make a lot of money over there, he said. He has what producers are looking for. That's not to say Cabrera's extraordinary penis is entirely natural. Reports say he stretched his half-meter member using weights as a teenager. Okay, this guy is now 54 years old. If, as he says in his dreams, he was going to be a huge porn star, wouldn't that have happened about 30 years ago? Also, up until this story, I didn't know there was anything that Guinness Book of World Records didn't record. Yikes. Anyway. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff All program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And ironically, it does, in a way, deal with sex. There you go. It's called synergy on this program, apparently. Dennis Hoff is the owner of many brothels in Nevada, including the famed Moonlight Bunny Ranch and the Love Ranch, both in Carson City. We've talked to Dennis on several occasions. He's not one to shy away from the limelight, and his name often comes up in the news. This time around, he is lashing out against Russian President Vladimir Putin for comments that the Russian leader said about the quality of Russian sex workers. Dennis is on the line right now from Nevada to talk about this. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Peter. Always good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, too. Let me set the table here from what you were talking about. Last week, on Tuesday, the Russian leader told reporters at the Kremlin that he doesn't believe Donald Trump hired prostitutes when he visited Russia in 2013, but the interview took a somewhat bizarre turn when Putin started boasting about the high quality of Russian sex workers. He said, I find it hard to believe that he rushed to some hotel to meet girls of loose morals, although ours are undoubtedly the best in the world. And I believe that's what you took offense to, right?
Well, absolutely, and so did the girls. You know, first of all, I'm glad our new president is in office, and I'm looking forward to good things happening, and of course, good relationships with Canada. You know, I don't like this. You know, the Russian girls are in the sex trade out of desperation. 70% of the high school girls in Russia have had sex for money only because they're broke. They have no money. They have no other choice. Our girls are in the business because they want to be. They're sexual nurses, if you will. They love to please people, and they want to make a good living at the same time. So to make that disparaging remark about American hookers is out of line, and I want Donald Trump. Now, our girls voted for Trump. We think they put him over the top, the Tramps for Trump, and because the Tramps for Trump movement in Nevada was very, very strong. And so I want President Trump to say to Putin, excuse me, you know what? This is a reflection on our prostitutes. We've got good prostitutes that want to be in the business. So I want Donald Trump to convey the message, if Putin hasn't got it, that I'm offering him a 2-hour stay in our bondage cage with some discipline techniques that maybe he's never seen in Russia.
Well, first of all, he at one time was the head of the KGB, so I find it hard to believe that there are discipline tactics he's unaware of.
Well, American hookers can apply them very well.
And we should also mention that even though you had, as you said, Tramps for Trump, you were also very bipartisan because you also had on the other side hookers for Hillary, did you not?
Oh, absolutely. The girls, you know. But we were actually, it was a little bit heavier towards the hookers for Hillary. There was about 320 girls that were hookers for Hillary and about 240 that were the Tramps for Trump. But the Tramps for Trump won out, and they're very proud of their efforts to support Donald Trump.
Now, since you said that you're looking forward to what this possible administration can do, are you in the least bit concerned with, you know, some very ultra-conservative, very, what's the term I should use, Bible-thumping type of government that wouldn't look kindly to your business?
Well, I do, of course, but it's about Nevada. And Nevada has been in the prostitution business since the 1850s. It's a part of our culture. It's legal here. It's the only place in North America that sex trade is legal, and including not Canada. And I don't see it going anywhere. You know, the state likes the income. They like the notoriety. They like the fact that they don't have girls on the streets. They don't have the sex trafficking that the big cities in the United States and in Canada has. You know, the sex trafficking is out of control.
Now, getting back to this latest controversy with the Russian sex workers, you've made your offer to Putin. Have you made this official, and are you expecting to hear back from the Kremlin?
Yes, we are, and we're also going to start in a little while encouraging Donald Trump to make a phone call to Putin and let him know that we want to see him in our bondage cage, and if nothing else, at least Trump needs to stand up and support the hookers of America and say, no, excuse me, you don't have the best hookers in the world. United States of America does, and Dennis Hoff has them in Nevada at his 7 legal brothels.
Okay, well, I have to ask this question. You know, when people make claims that one side is better than the other side, usually the one way to settle the score, so to speak, is to have comparison tests and contests. Have you reached out to the sisterhood in Russia to see if they wanted to do a friendly competition to settle this once and for all?
Well, I think we should, and you gave me a great idea, the Russian-American hooker games. And let's see what their girls can do as opposed to ours. The difference is those girls will leave the country and never come back, where our girls will.
Although, if there's anything that Russia does that is in any way, shape, or form athletic, there are always doping concerns. Would that worry you in this case?
Oh, absolutely it would, because we wouldn't want any part of that. Our girls aren't allowed to do that kind of stuff, even though now marijuana is legal in Nevada, and we think that Nevada will be the marijuana capital of the world because of the amazing amount of tourism that there is in Nevada, that people will want to come and check out the different strains of marijuana that are there.
Okay, so I'm going to throw a question out to you in left field since you brought that up. You've got marijuana, you've got legalized prostitution, you've got gambling in Nevada. How do you feel about the NFL possibly going there with the Raiders moving?
Well, I like it. I like them coming to Nevada. You know, that they're a little closer to my places. You know, the Raiders have been good customers over the years and good friends. In fact, Darrell Russell got arrested one time when he left the Funny Ranch for a DUI, and I ended up getting him all taken care of, getting it straightened out. But yeah, we're fans and we're friends of the Raiders, and we'd love to have them an hour away rather than 4.5 hours away in the Bay Area now.
Yeah, you know, with the exception of this past season, it's the first time in a long time that the Raiders have had an opportunity to work their way into the playoffs. They didn't go very far, but they've had losing seasons for a lot of years. I would have a feeling that if they moved to Nevada, I don't know if their winning would improve, but if they were losing, with everything else that's going on in Nevada, maybe they wouldn't care.
Well, you're right, they wouldn't care, but this, everything, Peter, is about the proper incentives. And if they come to Nevada and I say, if you get in the playoffs, everybody gets a free booty pass to the Bunny Ranch, like the one you've got in your pocket that you can use anytime for sexual favors, even though I know you only use it like a AAA card if it's an emergency and you haven't used it yet. But the fact that you know you've got it is a good feeling, isn't it?
Absolutely, Dennis. Absolutely. So getting back to Putin, are you throwing down the gauntlet? Are you going to... besides offering him what you offered him, and that is the bondage room, are you going to say, let's have this competition, let's settle this once and for all?
Yes, Russian-American hooker game 17, bring your camera.
and I guess maybe it's the old saying of buy American, right?
Buy American, absolutely, buy American, in our case, North American. Because, of course, we love Canada. It's North American, by North American. And I just wish Canada would wake the hell up and stop what they've done with these prostitution laws. It's just terrible what they're doing up there.
Okay. People can find out more information about your establishments. They can check out the website, bunnyranch.com. Dennis, it's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you.
And I will invite you to the Russian-American hooker games. You can be a judge.
Thanks, Dennis. Take care.
Bye, Peter.
Dennis Hoff, the owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch and the Love Ranch, to name just two of the brothels he runs in Nevada. You can also visit my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0388, and you'll find links to Dennis's site.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
coming to you from the outskirts of sanity. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the founder of the website Tedium Plus. Tony Cotillo will be in to talk about fantasy sports addiction. And of course, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, plus much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a man in Germany had an unpleasant shock when he returned home after working a night shift, only to find that his front door had been bricked up. The man, living in Mannheim, Hesse, in central Germany, came home from work to discover someone had built a brick wall in front of his door overnight. The man was forced to use an axe to break up the brick wall until he could access his own door. Speaking to local media, the police said the act must have made the victim feel like a Berliner in August 1961. The incident is being investigated by authorities and may have caused hundreds of euros worth of damage. Police officer Ingbert Zacharias said authorities assume several people had been involved in the crime. Officers are unclear as to why the man's property was targeted, and no witnesses have come forward. This is a crime and not a joke, the police officer said. Well, that's true. Germany isn't exactly known for its sense of humor, but I'm pretty sure there's at least one person, perhaps the mastermind, who might have found it funny. Missouri State Highway Patrol detectives were brought in to investigate a shooting in Green City, population 650. It happened when an unidentified man threatened to commit suicide in a room at the Green City Motel and Party Mart. No, really, that's the name of the place. The man, who had a handgun, locked himself into a room in the bathroom, and his brother kicked in the door to stop him. When the door flew open, it hit the suicidal man in the head, and the surprise resulted in the gun going off, shooting his brother, who was hospitalized in fair condition. The man with the gun didn't kill himself. I guess because getting knocked in the head was enough to make him realize he didn't want to die in a motel and party mart. And when two 15-year-old girls called the Joliet, Illinois authorities, firefighters came to help them get out of prison, reportedly even using a sledgehammer. That's because the prison, the Joliet Correctional Center, closed 15 years ago. The teenagers had snuck in, and one of them got locked in a cell, according to authorities. And a Twitter post reportedly from one of the girls said, "I accidentally locked myself in a cell at the abandoned Joliet prison and had to call Joliet Fire Department to get me out, so enjoy this video." The tweet and account were later deleted. Gee, I wonder if the girls will be happy to share video if their next stop will be a jail that is still in use. In January, the U.S. Court of Appeals finally pulled the plug on Orange County, California social workers who had been arguing in court for 16 years that they were not guilty of lying under oath because, after all, they did not understand that lying under oath in court is wrong. The social workers had been sued for improperly removing children from homes and defending their actions by inventing witnesses to submit made-up testimony. Their lawyers had been arguing that the social workers' due process rights were violated in the lawsuit because in no previous case on record did a judge ever have occasion to explicitly spell out that creating fictional witnesses and witness statements is not permitted. Wow. It's that kind of logic that allows some people to continue playing peekaboo well into adulthood. 50-year-old John Bubar was arrested in Parson Field, Maine in November after repeatedly lifting his son's mobile home with his front-end loader and dropping it. The father and son had been quarreling over rent payments and debris in the yard, and the father only eased up after realizing that his grandson was still inside the home. Well, if this guy is arrested and perhaps going to jail, does this mean while Dad is in jail, Junior gets to live rent-free in the double-wide? I don't know. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, federal prosecutors say four men who advertised heroin for sale on Facebook have been convicted of conspiracy to deal drugs in Atlanta. U.S. Attorney John Horn said Atlanta police received a tip that Bernard Big Pat Stockley was advertising heroin on the social media site and offering specials of the day. Prosecutors say Stockley and the other defendants accepted orders through Facebook and Snapchat and arranged delivery of the drug in a neighborhood where police have made many drug busts in recent years. Stockley, Tobias Ellison, Alvin Hewley, and Vance Horde all pleaded guilty to conspiracy to distribute heroin. They are to be sentenced on April 20th. Gee, up until now, I never really thought paying for those Facebook ads really garnered any business. Apparently I'm wrong. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Ernie Smith is the man behind the website and newsletter known as Tedium, which is subtitled The Dull Side of the Internet. It's a site that is chock-filled with interesting tidbits of information, some in bite-sized morsels, others in longer form, but all a wealth of information. To talk about the site, Ernie joins us on the line via Skype from Virginia. Hi, Ernie.
Hey, how's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So I'm going to start off with talking about the subtitle, The Dull Side of the Internet. There's nothing, from what I gather, and I'm new to your site, there's nothing dull about this.
You know, it's weird because I basically came to it from the perspective of I want to find the weirdest, strangest possible topics I can possibly find to write about. Like things that people would never think to write about because they seem boring, like the history of the Klondike bar or how the people who make Hot Pockets are really rich now and they give money to Jewish centers and all sorts of weird, crazy, all over the place kind of stuff. And I think that the thing is, it's dull when I find it. Hopefully when I'm done, after I'm done writing about it, I make it slightly more interesting than that.
and the newsletter itself, the title, I guess it comes under the same headline. You called it Tedium.
Yeah, I look at it this way. I'm kind of sweating the small stuff. I mean, when it comes down to it, the stuff that I write about is not going to change the world. It's stuff that happened a long time ago. It doesn't have, like, a huge amount of historical weight. Like, it's not the kind of thing that, like, you know, researchers are going to spend hours and hours studying. But it's kind of a fun niche. I can go and find a couple of really interesting things to write about, build some details out about a topic, write about a weird commercial I saw or some weird thought that I had. Like, I wrote an article, I want to say 4 or 5 months ago, because I wanted to answer this question for myself. Why are all the airport stores named after TV networks? I felt that was a question that nobody had, like, managed to answer. So I figured I would try to find that answer for myself and then maybe tell other people about it as well.
Wow. You know, I have to admit, this show is a show that looks for the kind of things that you talk about. And I came across your newsletter because I'm always literally trolling the internet looking for ideas and guests for this program. And now, when I found your newsletter, to me it was like panning for gold and hitting something that I knew was going to be a vein that I was going to attack from time and time again. You will now be one of my resources as far as where I find topics from, because you've got the kind of stuff I'm looking for.
Hey, I'm just glad to be a service.
What is it that catches your fancy? How did this all start for you? I understand that you started off before this, you were on Tumblr, with the short form blog. Where did this all begin for you?
So basically, I had this idea that I was doing short form blog for about 5 years, and I kind of built up an audience with it, and at some point I just felt like it was getting to be a little bit too much to lift, because I was basically on and doing it every single day. So I wanted to do a couple of things. I wanted to find a direction that was completely different from what I was doing on Tumblr, that I could kind of build from scratch a little bit. And I kind of wanted it to be something where if I ended up building it out, I wanted it to be something that was interesting to me, not necessarily trying to find a broad audience, but just something that I could have fun with. I kind of started with this weird idea. I wanted to at first the very basic idea I had for this newsletter was that I was going to call it Snoreworthy, and I was going to basically email people very long-winded pieces of prose that are incredibly boring about the most obscure topics possible. I kind of jumped off I kind of backed away from the ledge on that one, and I sort of remolded it into tedium, which I think is sort of takes that type of spirit where I kind of do things that shouldn't work. I write headlines that are really terrible for the web. I write very long newsletters in a medium where newsletters tend to be very short. I basically try to just take things that together shouldn't work, and I try to make them work for me.
Mm. Is this something that is a sideline for you, is a hobby for you, or are you actually making a living doing this?
I wish I could say I was making a living doing this. I do it on the side. I write the newsletter issues twice a week. About a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, I started writing shorter articles to kind of complement the longer pieces. But I basically do this on the side of a traditional marketing / journalism job. It's a little bit of both, so it's kind of a way for me to paint outside the lines when I'm not on and working at the job.
And what is your day job again?
I work for a company called Manifest.
What do you do for Manifest?
I work as a journalist and writer. I write about for my main client. I write about associations all day, so it's sort of a very niche topic in its own right.
So in other words, this is a way you do your job on a day to day basis, and what you do with tedium and before with short form blog is kind of a release when you finish work, right?
Yeah, very much that. I kind of treat it as I basically take the wild, crazy side of my personality, the one that digs into very dark, weird parts of Wikipedia or, the Internet Archive. I love the Internet Archive. I'm just all over that place. But I try to find some sort of joy in that, find some sort of interesting stuff in that, and basically use that, build out my ideas, and then I can take those to the day job, take those to wherever I'm working now, wherever I end up. I'm very big on the idea of the side project. I think that side projects are sort of a way to breathe air into your creative life cycle, I guess you could say. So that, I think, is kind of how I ended up with this whole tedium thing.
Do you envision down the road, because like I say, I've only come to it late in the game. You haven't been doing tedium for a long time, but I wasn't familiar with your short form blog before that. So I've been going back through some of your archives to see some of the articles that you've written before, the ones that are current. Do you see yourself down the road maybe collecting all these things into a book?
I'm not opposed to that. Like one thing that I think is really, interesting is that I've always kind of looked at the articles I write for TDM as things that are evergreen, things that can last the test of time, that can be read a year from now, and maybe there are some elements that are timely, but for the most part, it's like things that actually sort of work no matter what point of the game you're actually reading it. So I kind of treat it as like a way to tell longer stories that are interesting, and then maybe together it turns into a single whole that's, you know, a little bit stronger than the parts. Maybe it's a book, maybe it's just a really awesome website. I mean, I'm thinking about it, but it's not like the front of mind thing right now.
Well, whatever it is, it certainly is a lot of fun, and unlike your subtitle, it's not the dull side of the internet. if I like to think of it as a pillow, you know, you turn the pillow over, this is the cool side of the internet. That's what this is. people can check out the website. TDM.co is where they can find it. They can sign up for the newsletter. Ernie, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with you. Continued success with all that you do.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Ernie Smith, writer of the website and newsletter, Tedium. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is 0388, and you'll find links to Ernie's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus is known as the greatest show on earth. For a century and a half, its death-defying performances have dazzled audiences. But it's all about to end. The circus has announced that it will take down its big top for the last time this May. Why? Increased transportation costs and the difficulty of attracting a younger generation more fascinated with digital games are two reasons. And, according to sources like the Wall Street Journal, an expensive lawsuit by some animal rights groups is to blame too. The circus had to spend $20 million on lawyers for a lawsuit that was eventually dismissed. Let's be fair, the groups eventually had to pay back the circus $9 million. But it also took a lot of time and energy away from managing the circus, and it was just too much to overcome. Unfortunately, excessive litigation is now turning our justice system into a circus, and we have to wonder which American institution will fall next. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible. Let's go!
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about fantasy sports addiction. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. But right now, we've got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, an Oklahoma homeowner allegedly kidnapped a door-to-door salesperson after holding the woman against her will for an hour and then chased after her in the nude. Karen Rabitsky invited a salesperson into her home and then started ranting maniacally about religion and God. On a couple of occasions, the salesperson tried to leave after becoming uncomfortable, but she told police Rabitsky would not let her out and blocked the door. When she finally did escape through the front door an hour after being held physically, the salesperson said Rabitsky chased after her completely in the nude. Rabitsky finally went back in the house and slammed the door, officers say. When they arrived at the house, police say the woman opened the door and was still naked. She slammed the door twice in officers' faces before they were able to take her into custody. She was taken to the Owosso Police Department, was booked, and then transported to Tulsa County Jail. Well, You know, to me, the biggest revelation about this story is apparently the world still has door-to-door salespeople. I mean, who knew? Wow. Meanwhile, a man clung onto the roof of his father's stolen car and called police on his mobile phone during a 30 miles per hour motorway chase before the thief was arrested. Wow, that's going pretty fast. Osama Aokuli, who was largely unscathed after the late-night chase near France's border with Switzerland, told French media his reaction was spontaneous. "I told myself this was my father's car and that it meant a lot to him," Aokuli said. Police Commander Christophe Lesniewski said the chase through Oyonnax town and then on the motorway lasted several minutes before the car, an aging Renault Clio, left the main road and slowed down, at which point Aokuli let go. The thief tried to escape on foot, but police caught and arrested him. An aging Renault Clio. Wow. I'm guessing the son realized that perhaps his dad didn't have the full comprehensive theft coverage on the clunker. Now that's what I call family devotion. You know, regular listeners to the Stuff File program know that we like to share stories of the occasional odd truck spill. Well, here's the latest. A trucker has literally lost his marbles in the Indianapolis area. State police tell TV station WXIN that a truck carrying 38,000 pounds of marbles lost its trailer on southbound Interstate 465 near Pendleton Pike. The marbles were on the shoulder and in the median. There were no injuries, but a lane of traffic in the area was affected by the cleanup during much of the day. Wow, what a chance to get a really great game going, huh? That'd be cool, way cool. Speaking of games, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Last year, we had sports expert Tony Cotillo on the program several times as we talked about the business world of fantasy sports with the ongoing saga swirling around companies like FanDuel and DraftKings. Well, this time around, we look at the dark side of fantasy sports, and that dark side is addiction. Once again, Tony's on the line with us right now from Philadelphia. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks once again for being on the program. We talk about fantasy sports a lot on the show, as we mentioned, and there is, as I said, the darker side, and that is addiction. How big of a problem is it?
It's a major problem, and it seems like it grows each and every year, and it consistently gets even bigger. I mean, we're talking about, we've mentioned this before, I mean, it's come to people losing homes and marriages being destroyed and actually being disowned by their own children, so to speak. So it's a really big problem, and it keeps growing every year.
Now, there are people out there who are, or have rather, addictive personalities, and these are the ones who might be involved in gambling, for instance, well, which this is to a certain degree. Is fantasy sports, is it drawing in the addictive personality who is gambling anyway, or is it bringing in, for lack of a better term, fresh victims?
I think it's more, so to speak, fresh victims. And the reason why I say that is because it can kind of get away from you before you even know it. I mean, we're talking about it could be younger adolescents. It could be younger family people. It could be older people. It doesn't matter. It doesn't look at gender. It just basically, you think you're playing a normal game for a couple dollars here or there. You think, I'll lick my bank account for $25 a week. And before you know it, that 25 is times 10, times 15. And before you know it, you get so deep, you lie a victim to the addiction part of it. And before you even know it, it really happens really fast.
Is part of the problem the fact that it is so prevalent and so liked? I mean, I'm a fan of fantasy sports. I think it enhances my love for the game, primarily football and the NFL. But is that part of the problem, the likability and the social aspect of being involved in a fantasy sport?
Yeah, I really think. I think even so to speak, social media. And over the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years when the NFL has even come out and endorsed it more frequently than they have in the past, and you see more advertisements on Twitter, on Facebook, on the Internet, as more people grow to use the internet on an everyday basis, it just kind of seems to click, and it draws a bigger audience. So I think it enhances the sport just as well as you do, but for some people, it becomes a different part of that enhancement where it overtakes their minds, it overtakes their daily routines, instead of going maybe to their Facebook page or their email for the first thing every day, they're looking at their scores or looking at their statistics. So it really takes over the actual everyday routine of any individual.
Now, according to statistics, I understand that Fantasy Sports Trade Association, they say 56.8 million people played in some sort of fantasy league last year. That's about 14% of the entire U.S. population. So we've discussed the numbers, we discussed why it's become so popular, but let's look at the other side of the coin. Now that we know what the problem is, for some people anyway, what do we do about it?
I think we all just have to look in the mirror, and I hate to say it, but we've become a society, in my opinion, where we're always looking to blame somebody or somebody else. So I think in this instance, as fantasy sports grow and as you become a love or a follower of, I'll call it a sport, even though it's entertainment, but you have to look at yourself in the mirror every now and then and say, am I doing too much? Am I in too many fantasy leagues? Am I going too many fantasy sports? Is it taken away from whether it be my finances, whether it be my daily routines? You have to eventually be responsible for yourself, and I think that's the number one thing that we need to learn.
Now, when we talk addiction, are we talking the negative side of what everyone considers the addictive part of it, and that is, losing money and spending a lot of cash where it should be going someplace else, or are we talking about the time spent? And I'll give you an example. I did not participate.
Sure.
I did not participate in a fantasy league in NFL this year, not because I didn't want to, but because I didn't have the time to devote to the preparation. Because when you do a fantasy league, you have to prepare by studying the players to be involved in the draft, and then once you do that, maintain a certain level to deal with the course of the season involving trades or whatever the case may be. And I just didn't have the time for it, so I didn't do a fantasy league this year. But is that part of the situation that some people, even if they don't have the time, are addicted to it so they can't stop themselves?
I really think it is, because the time factor is enormous. And you brought up a great point. I mean, it's not only the preseason preparation. It's become a 12-month routine. It really has. And, when the NFL grew, and I keep saying football because obviously that's the most played fantasy sport, but, when they became with the NFL Network, and the NFL Network was on 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, fantasy sports became the same thing. And the reason why is everything has a fantasy agenda. So even when you're in the off season and the NFL draft is coming, not only are they talking about what that player is going to do for their team, but what's he going to do as a fantasy perspective, where he's going to get drafted. So now you have to look at the draft. Now you have to look at free agency. So you kind of take the whole NFL calendar and you mimic it to a fantasy calendar as well. So I think that's why people have become more addicted, because the time management part on it is enormous. It really is.
It's funny you bring that up, because my next question was just going to be on that very fact, and that is, I'm a fan of the NFL Network. I watch it a lot, even in the off season, and they have shows dedicated to fantasy sports, completely dedicated to it. And I find myself watching them, and I say to myself, wow, it's interesting where this world has gone to, where we're talking about the fantasy aspect of sports, and there are full shows surrounding that.
Yeah, there really is. And it went from, it started as a weekly show, and now we're talking about daily shows. We're talking about 4, 5, 6 days a week. And if you think about it, as the NFL grows, fantasy grows. As the NFL started playing Thursday night games, that's when we started to get 3 or 4 days of fantasy shows during the week. And, it's a trickle-down effect. So as you get more, I keep saying the word addicted, but you get more addicted to the face-to-face contact with the sport in general, your fantasy, your fantasy mind takes over, and you become more addicted to that as well. So it does come full circle.
Okay, now this is part of what you do for a living. So how many fantasy leagues were you involved with this year?
You know, it's funny when you say time devotion. You know, as a fantasy sports analyst or insider, whatever you want to call yourself. I mean, basically, you have to be careful because if you're, you know, you need to take enough time for you to do the analytics for your articles, for your research, so you can't be in as many leagues as possible. So, you know, I actually used to be in around, I'd say, 8 to 10 leagues, and I actually cut them back to 2 this year only because it was taking away my time from what I do on a daily basis. So I even learned that aspect of it as well.
And we should mention, you're also a man with a family too, right? So you have family obligations as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I even got the children involved in it a little bit too. So they're starting out as rookies. So I had a lot of involvement in the fantasy household, so to speak, this year.
So from that perspective, what do you say to people who might be concerned about a loved one? Because let's face it, a person who is involved in some sort of addiction, usually that person themselves is the last one to admit it. So what do you say to people around someone whom they feel might be an addictive personality when it comes to fantasy sports?
I just say, you know, be mindful and take notice. And it's something that I hold dear to myself. One of my best friends, I seen lose his entire family, his house, his car, his bankruptcy. I seen it just take over his complete psyche. And a lot of people, including myself, seen it. And we kept trying to talk to him about it. And, you know, we kind of had to have an intervention with his family and finally for him to realize. So, you know, if you think maybe, you know, your buddy used to go out with you, I would say once a week, get together, and he starts to scale back because it looks like he's being a little too addictive into the fantasy realm and running out of money or, you know, making, you know, curious comments, so to speak. Look at everything, and don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to pry, because you could save somebody's life. You really could.
Excellent advice indeed. We should mention that you're a fantasy sports expert and writer for the PhillyInfluencer.com. You're also the creator and reporter of FantasySportsAddiction.com and the football news columnist for FootballNation.com. Tony, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks a lot, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is number 0388, and you'll find links to Tony's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
25-year-old David Martinez was shot in the stomach during a brawl in New York City in December. He had inadvertently initiated the chaos when, trying to park in Manhattan's East Village just after Saturday at midnight, he moved an orange traffic cone that had previously been placed to reserve the parking space. He apparently failed to comprehend that the parking spot was in front of the clubhouse of Hell's Angels, whose members happened to take notice. Well, either he failed to realize the spot and who it belonged to, had a death wish, or there is a third possibility. I mean, why, oh why, would you knowingly test fate by trying to park your car in a spot in front of the Hell's Angels clubhouse? Well, one reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0388. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0388. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.